Hello.
Hello. Welcome back to
another episode of the Comedy Nerds.
Another episode. So I'm Dan McInerney.
And I'm Destin Diodato.
We are two New York-based comedians.
With between us, ten years each of comedy experience and stand-up, sketch, or whatever.
And improv as well.
And improv.
And we are comedy nerds, and we like talking about comedy, and we're here to talk to you about it.
So here we go.
Here we go. So this is episode 7.
I thought we discussed
nothing. No. Well, because here's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
So we've been recording these shows kind of like in advance and kind of stockpiling them. And because our plan was that we didn't want to do a show that was like, what's going on this week in comedy. Because there's actually a number of websites, good websites, that do that. And we wanted these to be more of like, sort of a bigger question and just taking one topic
of comedy. Yeah, more theoretical.
Right, so that you could listen to this at any point. Mm-hmm. You know, you can listen to it 3 years from now and it's still relevant. And it's not just like, a new Mike Myers movie opened or whatever.
Because that's when we figure this is going to catch on. Right. Like 3 years from now when we're, 150 episodes in, that's when people are going to start being like, hey, yeah, I should check this out.
This is good. Which actually, sadly, probably is true.
I know.
but something happened this week that we felt we should probably address. So we're call it episode 7. Call it episode 5.5. Who cares? Basically, this one's going to come before the one that we've already recorded because this week George Carlin died. Which part of me? This actually affected me more than I thought it would, to be honest. When I first read about it, it was like Monday or Tuesday, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Just because I've just been like all week thinking like, oh, there's not going to be another George Carlin special. You know what I mean? Like for my whole life, like every 2 years or so, there's a new special or there's a new album that comes out. And there's just not going to be any more.
Although in his defense, give the guy a break. He had like 18 HBO comedy.
Oh no! I'm not. That's what I'm saying. I'm not. There's no defense about it. I'm just thinking it's so sad. Yeah. Because every time there's a new one, it's like, hey, it's always. And we'll get to this. It was always awesome. Basically, is what I'm trying to say. And there's not going to be another one. I mean, because the guy's dead. He was good, but he wasn't that good. He can't come out with another one after he died. So
what we're saying is he's no Tupac.
Yeah. Well, nobody's Tupac. Wouldn't that be awesome if just like all this stuff kept coming out? Like he was like the Tupac of comedy. Yeah. Just like 12 years later, there's still like remixes, like Puff Daddy is like rapping, and there's like a George Carlin routine going on in the back.
HBO is like, oh, we forgot, we shot 3 more episodes that we never aired.
Right,
that's so weird.
And there's stuff about like President, like Barack Obama. We're like, hey, wait, what? How is that possible?
Although technically, Mitch Hedberg did release a new album after he died. Okay. Of stuff that they'd come across. So,
right.
So it's
possible.
It's possible. I don't think it's going to happen in this case.
No, I don't think so. But anyway, so George Carlin, I would say probably the greatest stand-up comic of all time.
The most, in my opinion, the most influential.
I just, in pure comedy, because I would say like maybe Richard Pryor you could make a case for him, but Pryor was more of a storyteller. Like, George Carlin never told, like, stories about his life. It was all pure, like, bits and, jokes. And that's not bad. I'm just saying, like, Pryor was more of a storyteller. Yeah. And so, just in terms of pure stand-up comedy, I think George Carlin's probably number one. I can't think of anyone else who up there.
I'm not going to necessarily say that, even though you should say nice things about the dead. But I'm honestly going to say he was the best stand-up. I'm going to say that he was one of the most influential stand-ups of his time, because not only was he producing comedy, but he was making people think, and he was challenging, wisdoms and all that kind of stuff. So, which is all stuff that I think is really important for a stand-up comedian, and I think that's why you won't find a stand-up out there who has a negative thing to say about him. They will all say that in one way or another, he affected them.
Yeah. He was fearless, first of all, because he was fearless in that he was already a popular comedian. Because I don't know if a lot of people realize this, but he basically had like 4 or 5 stages to his career. He started out as a comedy duo. It was Carlin and Burns, and then they were pretty popular. Then they split up, and George Carlin was like, you know, they were like really kind of straight laced, like your 50s, you know, suit and tie, slick back hair, you know, comedians who were, you know, doing jokes about, you know, mother-in-laws and stuff. And they were popular. And then when they split up, then George Burns started doing stuff on his own. And it was more, you know, like he did the Hippie Dippie Weatherman. It was a little more like, what's the word I'm looking for? Abstract.
Okay.
But it was still pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, he was popular. He was on the Ed Sullivan Show. He was on the Tonight Show. And he felt like a phony because that wasn't what he wanted to do. That, you know, that wasn't where his heart was. And if I was in that position, I probably wouldn't have had the guts.
Yeah.
Because he basically started his career over. And I probably would have, I'm just saying by myself, if I was that, you know, he was that popular, I probably would have just sold out and been like, this is, you know, my career and I'll be a phony and live with it. But he basically restarted his career from scratch so that he could do the kind of stuff that he wanted to do.
Great.
That's awesome. I'm just saying.
No.
Like, that's amazing. Like, that's the first thing. The other thing, there was a great quote from Jerry Seinfeld that just said that George Carlin was like, when he had an idea, he was like a stray dog on a, like a chicken bone, meaning that there was nothing left. Like he, mm-hmm. you know, when you're doing like, you were coming up with a joke, you know, you might think, oh, someone's already kind of done this, but I'm going to take like a different tact on it. I'm going to come at it a different direction. George Carlin, every direction was taken, every tact, you know, there was nothing left after he was done with a certain comedic idea. But you wanted to say something.
Well, I mean, I thought this was a good opportunity to sort of not necessarily have a theoretical discussion, but I've been hearing a lot lately about the seven dirty words, and that's by far the thing that he's the most famous for. You know, the seven words you can't say on TV. You know, and what struck me is that a lot of people keep thinking that the importance, that the basis of those seven dirty words, that the reason that he told them, was to shock and awe. Like, oh, I just said the seven words you're not allowed to say. And there, it wasn't at all. And I'm not saying that, you know, everybody thought that. I'm just saying that when you're hearing the media talk about it and stuff like that today. And the truth of the matter was that what he was saying, ultimately, from everything that I gathered from the bit and anything that he said since, was that the words themselves don't have any particular meaning. That using the right or wrong context, like any seven words could mean anything.
Right.
And I think that's where he sort of changed comedy, in that you could be darker, you could be nastier, you could be whatever, and now it was suddenly more acceptable. And I just thought it might be interesting to talk a little bit about, not necessarily whether or not that's a good thing, but the effect that it's had on us, because that allowed for the existence of the Andrew Dice Clays of the world. It allowed for the existence of all these comedians that would probably have been shunned, and now you were able to say mean, nasty, horrible things because he was the first and he was the one who was saying that it was okay because it wasn't, you know.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. I hadn't really thought about that. I don't know how he would feel to know that, you know, he had given a rise to the Andrew Dice Clays of the world. I think in a way I don't think you're wrong. I think it might be the kind of thing where, you know, you look at a movie like Star Wars, which gave rise to that sort of blockbuster mentality of, mm-hmm. you know, where, oh, it's all about the special effects and, you know, it's not about the story and the characters. And that's not the movie Star Wars is great. Like, it's not the fault of George Lucas and the movie Star Wars that this sort of horrible blockbuster mentality was born out of that. Like,
no.
And I think, you know, I mean, I think in a way that you're right that it did give birth to that. But in fact, that bit was the exact opposite.
Oh, I agree. I know. But I mean, I think it's an interesting, I just thought it was an interesting topic because, you know, on one hand you have, you could have something dark his point was you can have something dark and still allow it to say something bright.
Well, for me, the point of the bit was that, I think he says this directly in it, is that there's no such thing as a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
The words, by classifying these words as obscenities, you're giving them power
mm-hmm.
that they don't inherently have. Like, there's nothing wrong with any of these words. It's by you putting them in a corner and saying you're not allowed to say this, that gives it a power that it doesn't have. And so if you sort of open the door and, you know, don't give it that power, then it can't hurt anymore. And it's not just these words, as, you know, things like racial slurs and other hurtful words. It only has the power if you let it bother you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If you don't let it bother you, or if you don't go around saying, well, this group of people can say this word, but this group can't, that in that way, you're giving that word power to then hurt you. And it was an amazing insight into language and what language can do. I mean, to me, that's what the whole bit was about.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a way, it's funny is that when he first did that bit, it was, there were no real rules. I don't know if people realize this. There weren't really any rules for what you could and could not say on TV. There was sort of a gentleman's agreement among the major networks and stuff. And by playing here in New York, I don't know what station it was. I don't know if it still exists, but it was a station here in New York, played that bit on the radio. And because of that, I think the FCC existed, but it wasn't nearly as powerful as it is today. They laid down the rules officially of what you could and could not say on radio and TV.
Well, no, I mean, technically, as far as I know, you can, none of those words are officially against the law. But what they have done is create family hours. So, you know, you can ultimately say any of those words. It's just the thing you get fined for is indecency and going against, you know, but it's somewhat arbitrary what indecency means. Those seven words were never particularly added to a list, but they're added to a mental list.
Well, right. What happened was they played it on the radio. Somebody complained. I don't know exactly how it worked, but this went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court said, yes, there is a limit. There is, you know, an obscenity. And this goes back to the power you're giving to the words. Oh, I just said one of them. The power you're giving to these words is, you know, now there's a line drawn in the sand. Now the government has clearly said these words are bad and you can't say them. And so then you could get fined for obscenity. The other thing is the FCC doesn't watch TV and they go, oh, that's a bad word, we're going to fine you.
No.
Somebody has to complain.
Right. But to a degree, I think that's, maybe that's part of what I was trying to get at earlier, is the sense of, I guess, decency and things like that, is that what George Carlin was saying, it wasn't the words, it was the intent.
Right.
You know, so he was saying, no matter kind of like what your methodology is, maybe I'm just inferring this from it, but no matter what your methodology is, it's the ending result, you know, that you get at.
Yeah.
I always come back to something that you and I had actually worked on in the past, something that I believe that you're still sort of uncomfortable with.
Okay.
But it was a sketch that Dan and I had worked on together. I directed it. He was in it. Called What Would Jesus Do?
Mm-hmm.
And when the sketch was originally brought in, it was, I believe, it had three separate beats. And the third beat had a couple who were making out.
Mm-hmm.
And they were deciding whether or not they were going to have sex. And then Jesus appears. And Jesus says, you know, just don't use a condom. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
Right.
And the purpose behind that ultimately was, you know, these are things that are said in the name of Jesus. What happens when you actually act them out and imagine Jesus is saying them? And that was the third beat. And I said, no. If we're going to make this, we're going to make it and we're going to slap people in the face with it. And I was like, that's the first beat. Let's see how dark we can take this while still telling the truth. And the third beat ultimately had Matthew Shepard getting beaten to death with a pistol from Jesus. And to this day, everybody who I've spoken to about the sketch is split 50-50 down the middle of, that was a really cool idea, and that went over the line, that was too far, that was obscene, that was upsetting. And I'm sure that there are people out there who are thinking the same thing right now.
Right.
And in my opinion, because the ultimate intent was to turn it around on people and say, hey, all you crazy people who, you know, are against gays and think they should be harmed and stuff like that, look at it when it really happens and see how disturbing that is. You're doing this in the name of Jesus. And that's sort of, I think, an extreme example of words being very upsetting, but the intent being right.
Well, I mean, I think in that case, it was, first of all, I don't think I really had a problem with that sketch. There were other sketches I had problems with. But I never had a problem with any of the sketches. All I ever said was, I want to make sure that the intent of the sketch is totally clear. You know what I mean? And then if I feel the intent of the sketch is totally clear, then if you misinterpret that, like, that's not my problem. Like, right. I can sleep at the end of the day knowing that we did our best to make it clear. And if you still miss the point, you know, well, that's your problem, not ours. But no, in that case, I mean, I think that's another great example of the power of language, that you're using, you know, Jesus as a shield to spread your hate.
Yeah.
Now, well, what if Jesus was actually doing these horrible things? You know, now see how ridiculous that is. And it was a tough sketch. we did it to silence a few
Not
times.
Always.
Not always, but I'm just saying, I mean, you know, people, there was that I always love the gasp into a sort of laugh, like, oh, ha, 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 I see what you've, oh God, this is terrible, as Jesus beats someone to death with a pistol.
Yeah.
Well, I think, what were we singing in the background? Oh,
it was the Scorpions were playing.
Yeah, we were.
Winds of Change.
That's right. The Winds of Change was playing in the background.
But the reason I bring it up is because I think before Carlin sort of stepped out and said some of this stuff, the minute you did any of those things, you were deviant.
Right. Well, first of all, let's give credit where credit's due. Carlin has said, Lenny Bruce opened the door and people like me and Pryor walked through it. So, sure. Okay. I mean, he was sort of, you know, the other thing, this is a topic for another time, but the other thing is what people, you know, Lenny Bruce is sort of this, you know, this legendary character. And then when you actually sit down and listen to his albums, wow, they're not funny. he's just kind of rambles on and it's like, it's not really. And, you know, he was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he was a genius, and then he was completely fearless, and then he went on stage and talked about these things that literally no one else was talking about.
I know you're afraid of losing your comedy card.
Right. No, I mean,
by saying that, there are certain things that we just go shh.
Well, I mean, the other thing, yeah, I mean, the other thing, first of all, you know, no one had done it before, so I guess he was just trying to figure it out. The other thing is that, you know, he would, you know, when the punchline's like, Eisenhower's wife is, you know, a whore or whatever, it's like, I don't really remember, you know, I don't know the specific politics of the day, like that kind of stuff gets lost.
That may have been lost on you.
Yeah, like, and just, you know, and I don't know. Anyway, let's get off that topic because it's nothing to do with what we were talking about. But what I wanted to say about George Carlin, if we could jump onto that, was a lot of this coverage that I saw was all about how he was this, you know, this vicious, cranky old man, you know, who would just sort of rip people apart, and which actually is not wrong. And I felt like, as much as I loved him, he just, you know, he got so angry by the end, to the point where he just kind of was ranting on for like minutes, and it was funny, but it just wasn't George Carlin funny. I mean,
It wasn't as much thought out as it was just, man, I hate this.
Yeah, just like pure, you know, bile and vitriol, which is fine. I'll go along with you there. I have no problem with that. But it just was kind of like, I mean, it just wasn't at the level of my friends and I would just sit and just recite whole bits back and forth to each other. Because not only were they funny, they were like poetry. They were like music. I mean, he was just such a master of like with words and language and stuff. I mean, it was still great. You know, it's kind of like The Simpsons now where it's like, well, it's not as good as it used to be, but it's still better than most of it. Yeah. I mean, it was still one of the best. It just wasn't, you know, wasn't as good as it had been. But, you know, and so a lot of people talk about, you know, just how vicious he was. But all the stuff I saw, you know, they were kind of showing like his, you know, his most famous bits and people are saying his best bits. Nobody talked about what's my favorite George Carlin bit. I don't know what the official title is, but I'm going to call it The Little Things. Which is, he did this whole routine about the things that everybody does and nobody talks about them. And it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what color you are, you know, everybody has done these things at one time or another. And they include when you pick up a suitcase that you thought is full and as a fact is empty, and for a split second you think you're the strongest man in the world. Or when you're walking down a flight of steps and you think there's one more step than there is and your knee shoots into your chest. You know, and it was great because the whole point of the bit was, again, no matter who you are, these little stupid things are in fact the things that unite us all. Mm-hmm. That everyone has had this experience. My favorite one is he says, do you ever look at your watch and then you don't know what time it is? So you look again, and you still don't know what time it is. So you look a third time, and someone says, hey, what time is it? You go, I don't know. you know, and again, that's experience that everyone had. And that to me, was George Carlin. Was, you know, not the vicious, you know, flame-throwing jerk who was just kind of up there screaming. But the guy who really kind of, you know, thought things through. And again, that's why I say that he's the greatest stand-up comedian of all time, just because he would just take an idea and just, you know, go all the way through and make you understand it, to come back around and make you go, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I, you know, I, in a way, like, he would take things that were so obvious that in fact you almost couldn't see them, you know what I mean, and just sort of, you know, point them out, and you'd be like, oh god, yeah, you know, that's so brilliant the way he just would kind of, you know, point out something that was so obvious that you couldn't see it. And that's my favorite bit, and that's the way I will remember him.
When I was hearing all the, you know, the praise for him and all that this last week, and they were going through the number of specials that he had and stuff like that, I think they said it was like 18 HBO specials. Yeah. And for those people who aren't really super familiar with stand-up comedy, I mean, everybody's familiar with it. If you're listening to this, you're familiar with it. But it's commonly believed in the stand-up world that the HBO one-hour comedy special is the Super Bowl of stand-up specials. It's the highest thing you can achieve to. There's, you know, I mean, they're selling out the Garden and stuff like that. But ultimately, getting an HBO special is the biggest thing you can get. That is another way of just sort of saying that, like, he's probably the most successful franchise in stand-up history.
Well, not only that, not only getting an HBO special, but I would think that having enough good material for one HBO special is a major achievement. And the fact that he was able to have enough material for 18 of them, it's just like, I mean, it's mind-blowing.
It's sort of like what you were saying before. It's like, he can do a special, but only have 7 bits.
Right.
You know, and just
beat
the crap out of each of them. And they're funny the whole time. I don't mean, you know, when I say 7 bits, just because I don't begrudge him and his ability to do 20 minutes on one simple idea.
Right.
And it's never that he just, you know, he beat it till you stop laughing. You were laughing the whole way, and you wanted to see where else he was going. So I appreciate him for that, is all I'm saying.
So George Carlin, good guy.
Yes.
I think we're going to say in the end. So let's move on to the next thing. Hey, Dustin.
Yes,
Dan. We got some feedback.
I know. We've been getting some emails, talking to some people.
Yeah. So I just wanted to bring this up because there is some concern in the feedback we were getting.
Okay.
That we were being a little condescending, maybe.
Okay.
A little arrogant. We made some comments in the past about a show, shows like Two and a Half Men,
mm-hmm.
and maybe Larry the Cable Guy, and the you know, saying that, well, you know, who are you guys to say that, you know, Arrested Development is good and Two and a Half Men sucks? Well, first of all, that's, I think, the way we feel about it,
yeah.
And we're not gonna change it. We're not gonna blunt our opinions of certain things. But what I do want to make clear is that we're not instructing anyone on what to like. If you like Two and a Half Men, knock yourself out, man. I hope you have a great time. I hope you sit there and giggle yourself to death. And in fact, I'm not even that a topic for a show we're going to do sometime in the future is our comedy guilty pleasures.
Okay.
Things that we probably, you know, shouldn't like, but we do. And I have a number of them, a number of shows that are simple and stupid and that I love.
And in that vein, I mean,
yeah.
I would rather not be a comedy nerd. I enjoy it. I enjoy us talking about all this stuff.
Yeah.
But the truth is that because I've been doing it for so long and I've been analyzing it to the point of wanting to throw up, that I can enjoy a lot of stuff that I wish that I could.
Right.
And I think part of what we're getting into in the last episode, sort of it, what brought that question up, is that do somebody like Dan or myself have a different, you know, concept of what needs to happen in order for something to be funny? And that's the approach. I mean, that's the mental state that we're in. I'm not saying that you're necessarily wrong for appreciating something that is, you know, a more obvious sense of humor. It's just that the whole point of this podcast is to look deeper into all of those things. And it's definitely a legitimate, you know, observation.
Right. Well, I mean, I think, you know, not only do we not care if you disagree with what we say, but in fact, we encourage it. And that's why at the end of the show, we're like, hey, send us an email, you know, if you feel differently. Because, you know, and that's fine. Again, we're not instructing you on what you should and should not like. But we're also not going to say, like, oh, you know, we're going to tell you our opinions on things. And you're right. I personally don't wish that I wasn't such a comedy nerd. But, I mean, I think I made the analogy last time about, you know, a guy who gets really into music. And then before long, all he's doing is listening to this one old blues guy and this, you know, punk rock band that only played two shows, you know, in 1972, that, you know, when you go really deep on stuff, all of a sudden the stuff that's kind of on the surface and that's simple isn't good enough anymore. Cause you know, you got all that and you see where it's going. And so you go deeper and deeper. And so now a show like Two and a Half Men isn't going to cut it anymore. Although I, you know, as a kid, I sat there and watched, Different Strokes.
Yeah,
and laughed hilariously every time, you know, he said, "What you talking about, Willis?" And I watched Perfect Strangers. It's just as I got older, and I went really deep on this stuff, and I just watched so much comedy, and that after a while, you know, certain things just weren't cutting it anymore for me. But if you like it,
And
knock yourself out.
I used to watch The Snorks.
Yeah,
that's the dumbest show. One week, I'd like to do an episode where we just tell everybody in the Netflix The Snorks, and we just do
just an all Snorks episode.
Yeah, where we just do sort of like a riff track, a Snorks thing. But that, you know, that's when we have a little bit more time and a little bit more alcohol. Right. But I would like to take a moment here to talk to the flyover states.
Okay, fair enough.
Because that's another comment that we've gotten that
we've been a little
And I've gotten caught on this, actually. I did a radio interview in Colorado, and I said something negative about the flyover states. And the DJ called me out on it, and I was able to sort of work my way out of it.
Okay.
But I realized that, you know what? Do I have a partial bias against them? A little bit. And I'm going to get into why in a second. But the particular situation that was involving this time was comments that were made around Arrested Development and how we were hoping to, you know, we were hoping to expose people in the Midwest you know, who may not have picked up on Arrested Development to watch it.
Right.
And in this case, it may have, at the time, come across as a bias, saying that, like, oh, the people in the Midwest are too stupid to have watched Arrested Development. Mm. That is not the case. It's just that I've actually seen the Nielsen ratings. And if you look at the Nielsen ratings for Arrested Development, big on the coast,
yeah,
zero. It's right. Sort of like, have you ever seen that the shot of North Korea?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, of Korea, yeah. And then, like, South Korea's all lit up.
Yeah.
And there's like, and there's just this black hole where North Korea
is. And then there's, like, one little light where
the palace is, like, the whatever the president's palace is.
That's what the U.S. looks like in the ratings for Arrested Development. I just happen to know that because I work in the industry.
Right.
So when I said it, it wasn't a bias against them. Now, getting into my bias of...
Well, and let's say this. I'm sure somewhere in the middle of the country, somebody was watching the show.
Oh,
it's not like there weren't, like, a few people. Yeah. But just a majority, on a whole, it was kind of just like, you know, the New York, L.A. sort of area, Chicago maybe, was where people were watching the show. Middle of the country, not so much.
Yeah, and I envisioned in that case for it to be a situation sort of like when I was younger. I admit it, I watched Dawson's Creek,
right?
And I figured, okay, well, everybody I knew watched Dawson's Creek, so therefore everybody was watching Dawson's Creek. But then, you know, you talk to, like, your grandmother or something like that, and they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Because they're not submitted, they're not in that situation. It wouldn't even occur to them to put that on. And I assumed that that is what was going on in those places.
Right.
Anyway, my bias towards the flyover states. Here's the thing about the flyover states. good for you guys. I enjoy you. And a lot of times when people hear us New Yorkers talking, you know, I mean, I know that there are a lot of states out there that would rather us just get, you know, put in the ocean.
Right.
That do not want New York to be a state.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a bias towards us, and sometimes we feel biased towards you. And because you hate us so much. and here's the thing. Are we egotistical about being in New York? Yes. We are.
Right.
And here's the reason why.
Oh, God. We're going to get in trouble. Go ahead.
Okay. Ignoring that we have, you know, the best theater and most of the networks and stuff like that. Here's the reason why. Because the vast majority of us live in very, very tiny apartments.
Yeah.
We have to take mass transit everywhere we go. And it smells. And it's awful. And we could be hurt very badly. We have the highest chance of being just randomly stabbed or shot on the street.
Mm.
We're mostly poor.
Oh, yeah. I think people watch, like, Sex and the City and don't understand that 99% of New Yorkers are just like, I mean, it's so expensive here.
Oh, yeah. No, that...
Like, we're just flat broke all the time.
The friend's apartment?
Yeah, no. Does not exist.
So,
In fact, your apartment is huge in comparison to most people. Yeah. And this is a small apartment. I mean...
So my point being is that the vast majority of things that we have to experience and tolerate on a daily basis are awful.
We need to believe.
Yes, that that's we're the thing.
The first time you are walking down the street and you disturb a bunch of rats, like a nest of rats in a garbage can, and they come running out, you just need to believe that the place you live is awesome.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd go insane.
Yeah, we need that lie.
Yeah.
We need it. Okay.
We need to believe.
We need to believe that the Yankees are the best team that's ever happened in baseball, or the Mets, but nobody really believes that.
The Yankees suck. Mets are great. Go on.
You know, we need to believe that we are the center of some sort of universe. Otherwise, we'd shoot ourselves.
Yeah, we really would. That's an excellent point.
So, when you're sitting in your 5,000 square foot home with your 4 acres of land,
and your, like, $500 in property taxes or whatever,
you can laugh at us and go, those morons who are sitting in, like, a 200 square foot apartment and paying $1,500 a month.
On top of that, real quick, it is so hot.
Yeah.
Right now in New York, it is sweltering. And anywhere, I don't think people can understand what heat is like until you feel it in New York. Because, first of all, the humidity is terrible. Because we're, you know, we live on an island.
Yeah.
A. And B, it just, you know, with all the concrete and everything, it just holds the heat.
And I assure you, that even if it's hot where you are,
yeah,
and there's concrete where you are, the ratio of air to urine,
yeah,
is yes, not equal to what it is here. People yeah, just stop and pee on the streets. Not everybody. You know, your teacher isn't going to stop and pee on the streets. But if you go on the wrong block, oh, look, there's somebody peeing.
Yeah.
I don't know why. There's a bathroom right there. He could go in it. No, he just decided to pull down his pants.
Yeah. And also screaming about the chip the government put in his brain.
Yeah.
And you don't even, you know, it's like anywhere else in the country. It's like a tree. Like, you yeah, don't even notice it. You just keep on going.
And the closest you can get for cost and congestion is L.A.
Yeah.
But in L.A., it's always nice out.
Yeah.
We don't have that. We have bitter cold.
Bitter cold, yeah.
We're living in the worst place we could possibly be,
yeah,
so we need to have an ego about something. So right, forgive us if occasionally we like to come up with a thought that the people in the Midwest have their issues.
Right.
Because otherwise, they're living the utopia.
Yeah. No, that's actually the point. I was only going to defend myself by saying I've never lived anywhere except for New York. And so I don't know what the rest of the country is like. So it's not arrogance, it's ignorance. I have this bias against the rest of the country only because I don't know what they're like. And so I'm just sort of projecting and assuming things. But I like your point a lot better. So I'm gonna forget about all that and just say that, yeah, we need to believe that we're better.
So give us that.
Yeah.
So we don't
just try.
We don't, you know.
It's either freezing cold or it's sweltering hot. I can't tell you how many times I've smelled human feces.
Yeah.
It's just horrible. There's rats.
Yeah, I've had mice
everywhere
in this apartment. And
they've mice,
challenged me to fights pretty much.
Cockroaches. Have you ever oh, God.
Yeah, it's super gross.
Oh, it's disgusting. And those stupid water bugs, they're like cockroaches, only gigantic. Yeah. I'm sitting in, when I lived with Hartney, I know this means nothing to no one, but you know who he is. We're just sitting there watching TV. This gigantic bug just goes crawling across, you know. I mean, this thing's the size of my fist. It just goes crawling across the floor. Then we got to kill it and throw it out the window. And I believe Hartney was just like, you know what? Kansas sucks. And then we sat down and we're just like, we just needed to believe that this was all worth it to live in New York.
So know that any hatred, not hatred, but any bias that you may feel is actually bias against ourselves.
Yeah,
it's actually... It's actually hate that we're turning inward.
Yeah, it is. That's an excellent point. A few other things we got on the feedback is we should have guests. We're working on that. We're gonna upgrade our technology.
Yeah.
For recording these. So when we do that, and we're gonna have like more conceptual episodes. But so all these things are coming. I think that was really about it.
But thank you for the feedback and keep it coming.
Yes, excellent. Please keep it coming and write and, you know, again, put the on iTunes, put your little, just type like, this show's great. Everyone should download it.
All right. So I think that's our show for this week.
That's the show for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Do us a favor. I believe HBO 2 is going to show all 18 George Carlin specials in a row. Try to watch as many of them as you can if you haven't seen them before, or if you have seen them before, try to watch as many as you can, and or if not, try to get his albums and watch his specials because he's awesome. So that's it. Dan McInerney.
I'm Destin Diodato.
This has been the Comedy Nerds. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody. You've been listening to the Comedy Nerds. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns you would like us to address, please contact the show at info@thecomedynerds.com. That's info@thecomedynerds.com. Also, be sure to visit us on the web at thecomedynerds.com. Our theme music is by the Santa Marias, and you can find them online at santamariasnyc.com. If you like what you heard here today, won't you please write a review in iTunes and tell all your friends about the show. And if you didn't like what you heard, you can write reviews in iTunes. I don't know where you got that crazy idea. I'm Dan McInerney, and for Dustin and myself, thanks for listening.